Welcome to episode 427 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. 2 weeks in a row, Josh. 2 weeks in a row.
And actually going for three. I think you're going to be here next week, too.
I think you're probably,
Yeah, we probably can't plan out much further than that, but I think we're going for a whole lot of weeks in a row here. I think we're going to be good. All right, well, you're here. So are our listeners in many ways. We've got them here in the live chat, and we've got some listener feedback. These, I believe, were all sent in to our inbox, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com is the email address. This first one is from Ray, who, again, this is listeners helping listeners. Love it. Ray responding to Rob's question from last week. He says, I'm not sure if I understand your listener Rob's problem. As I understand it, he wants to use voice to play back his local media. If that's correct, another option would be to use Plex with Amazon Alexa. Sorry for saying the word, guys. There is a Plex skill for the Amazon voice assistant. I have not tried it, but I hope someday I will. Richard, when I first saw this message from Ray, I thought, of course Plex has an answer. Like, Plex is always the answer. I thought about like little kids in Sunday school when they get asked a question and the answer is always Jesus. No matter what the question is, it's always Jesus, right? On this show, the answer is always Plex. Plex. Always.
Yeah. So this might work. I was not able to get this to work. I have the Plex skill installed, and I'll talk more about that a little bit later. And I set it to a server that has a music collection on it, and I went to play specific songs and artists that are on that music collection by asking Plex to play blah, 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 and no blah, blah, blah was to be had. It wasn't happening. So I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if music is one of the things that it doesn't do, but I thought it was supposed to. So I don't know. Might need a little bit more experimentation. I'd be curious to hear if anybody has actually done this, because I think somebody else also wrote in and suggested this. And in both cases, I think the answer is, oh, yeah, I need to check this out someday.
Yeah, I think so.
Speaking of which, we also heard from Joe, and Joe, who identifies himself, I love this, as close friend of the show. So Joe also had some feedback for Rob, and Joe wanted to remind Rob that even Prime Music, which if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, has a lot of music in it, and it may be all that Rob needs for local playback for a lot of content. Now, that would depend on his taste, obviously, and it would depend on the library that Rob has amassed. But he also confirms, Joe also confirms, that you have the ability to upload songs on Amazon, and that does work. And I have since confirmed that that does work. I can play back music through my Echo using the Amazon content that I have from uploaded Amazon content. The other thing that's really cool, and he mentions this, is that any music you've ever bought on Amazon that has that auto rip feature, so you automatically got a digital copy of it when they rolled that feature out, those are all in your music library. They don't count toward your song limit that you might have. And those are all also available for you to play through the Echo as part of your music collection. So that might be something to think about too. If you don't pay for the music subscription upload service, you get 250 songs that you can upload, which really isn't that many. But if you pay the $30 annual fee, then I think it's something like 20,000 songs or something like that. So still a pretty good service. He also mentions that for $4 a month, he could get the Prime Unlimited, which is really just one Amazon Echo being able to get the Prime Music service for the entire library works very similarly to other music services. So a lot of good suggestions there. And again, he says he hasn't tried it, but maybe Plex.
Of course, Plex. Of course. All right. One more message here. This one is from Kevin. He wanted to give us his feedback on using Movies Anywhere and how it's been working out for him, and a couple of tips that he's found. The first one is that he's been redeeming some standard definition codes. I would presume these are from DVDs as opposed to Blu-rays, redeeming them through Movies Anywhere. And a bunch of them have been showing up in Vudu as HDX copies.
That's really nice.
Yeah, that is super nice. So if you've got old DVDs laying around that you haven't redeemed, it's worth a shot at this point, right? You might get a free HD copy. That'd be great. He also wants to point out that movies that were bought from other ultraviolet retailers have been flowing into his Movies Anywhere account. He's purchased a couple movies from Fandango now, and they showed up in Vudu, and then Vudu pushes them into Movies Anywhere. The only thing different about it is he says that they didn't show up as recently purchased. They just flowed into the general library, so you might not notice them at first glance, but they're probably there. So if you weren't quite certain, might be worth double checking your library if you've got a lot of movies in there to see if that also worked for you. And then his last tip was something that I didn't even know was a thing, really. I don't know how you would implement this, but he says sharing your Vudu library will also populate the Movies Anywhere account. I'm sharing my ultraviolet library with a friend, and ultraviolet, which must be ultraviolet purchases, are shared between our accounts regardless of who makes them.
So that is really cool. And I didn't realize that these would actually show up as part of Movies Anywhere. So it's true that Ultraviolet, as a part of their initial rollout, in fact, this was part of the original spec, and it's one of the few things that I think I could argue that they got right, although they did a terrible job of promoting it, is that you can share your library with friends. And you can have up to 6 different users on an ultraviolet library. So that gives access to the other people for that content. And so what I think he's saying then is that these are also showing up in his Movies Anywhere account for those libraries that have been shared with him. That is so cool. I totally need to do that with all my friends now. Well, at least 6 of them.
Well, yeah. Probably not me if you're hoping to get anything out of it, but I wouldn't mind you sharing your library with me. You don't need to, though. You already, we've got Plex, right? So yeah, right. I had no idea this was a thing. I'm sure you talked about it, Richard, because you were the ultraviolet guy when all of this stuff was rolling out. But yeah, that's a little tidbit that I completely missed. I never would have expected one of these types of services to willingly offer that type of feature.
Yeah, very cool. We learn stuff all the time from our awesome listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We love you guys so much. All right, let's move on to our featured story. And frankly, I think we almost had a little bit of contention as to which would be the featured story this week, because there's a couple of biggies here. But we're going to go with the Harman Kardon Invoke first. It launched here in the United States, US only. That's maybe one of the downsides to this. On Sunday, October 22nd, just came out. This is, of course, the long-awaited Cortana-powered speaker, and it's here. Basically, that leak that we talked about a couple episodes, maybe it was even just last episode, when it showed up in the Microsoft Store online and then they pulled the page. It was basically all correct. It came out on the 22nd. It is $199, as was expected. The size, the color options, all that stuff, all of that is correct. And it is available now. People have them. Reviews are up all over the internet. Let's talk a little bit about what it does. Obviously, it's got Cortana enabled. You know, it's got the Cortana voice assistant, same Cortana type of things that you can do on Windows 10 on your phone, regardless of what operating system your phone is running. There's a Cortana app for it. And you've got Cortana on your Xbox One. So Cortana is all over the place now, and including finally a smart speaker. That smart speaker, of course, it's a speaker, so you want to know what music services it has. It's got Spotify, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. The big one missing there is obviously Pandora, but it's supposedly coming soon.
Here I was going to say Groove. Oh, right. You want to play music from your own Groove library? Yeah, we're not doing that yet.
It, really?
As far as I can tell.
Wow. I didn't even think to ask about that. Wow, that's crazy. That is really, really crazy. It ought to at least do the Groove streaming of your own library from OneDrive. That's
you would nuts. Think if somebody knows otherwise, please let us know.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Another interesting feature that this does, Skype calling. It provides 6 months of free Skype calling, and this is to other Skype accounts or phone numbers. You can just say, you know, call so-and-so. Like, I could say, call Richard Gunther, and I think it's going to ask me, do I want to call him on Skype? Because I've got a Skype contact for him. Or it's going to look at my address book and see that I've also got a couple of phone numbers for him and ask me which one I want to call him on. And it's just speakerphone straight out, you know, via Skype. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it's smart because Google and the Amazon Echo are now promoting those features. So they're coming right out of the gate with that. It's very smart.
Mm-hmm. It also has some home control functionality, banking, scheduling, Bing as the search engine, of course. Big one for both you and me, Richard. On the home control side, it supports Insteon. Google Home doesn't support Insteon.
Yep, that's true. But it only supports Insteon devices. It doesn't support Insteon scenes. It's just like Cortana on the desktop right now. So hopefully they'll improve that like they did with the Echo and mm-hmm. eventually make it work with scenes as well.
Yeah. And it sounds like some of the home control integrations, they've also got Hue and some of the other more popular ones, maybe aren't exactly perfect and perfectly reliable just yet, but it's brand new.
They're not. I can tell you just from Cortana on the desktop, they're not.
Okay. So, Richard, what are other reviewers saying about the Harman Kardon? Because you and I don't have one yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reviews right now are kind of mixed. I think that overall, people are saying that the sound is, you know, it's obviously better than an Echo. It's in many cases better, in many reviews I've read, better than the Google Home sound quality. Some people are comparing it to the Play One, which makes sense since the Play One, or rather the Sonos One now, just came out with the Echo Assistant built into it. So that's a natural point of comparison. Also, the price point is the same, right? They're mm-hmm. both $199, single speakers. So you might expect them to be similar. Harman Kardon, of course, is a sound company. This is a company that should know how to make good speakers. And I think the thing that's interesting to me, though, is that as far as that sound quality, the reviews have kind of been all over the place. Some of them are saying it's better. Some of them are saying it's about the same as a Play One or a Sonos One. Some are saying that it's nowhere near as good. I don't quite know what to believe. I want to hear it myself, and I have not had a chance to hear it myself. You know, my friend Seth over at Home Tech FM saw one and took a picture of it and said, "Look, Invoke in the wild." And I said, "Where did you see that?" And he's like, "At the Microsoft store." I'm like, "That is not in the wild." So that is about as far from in the wild as you can get for a Microsoft product. I unfortunately, he wasn't able to test it out. They didn't actually have it on there. So, well, short of getting one, I don't know how to try this thing.
Well, I guess you're just going to have to get one.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
By the way, Best Buy has them too. It's not just the Microsoft Store.
No, they totally do. They totally do. The other thing is that I think for the most part, people are a little bit underwhelmed with the lack of capabilities coming out of the gate, because we already have two contenders that are very, I want to say, well endowed with features, but you have to remember that they all started from nothing, right? They had to build up their ecosystem of skills, and they had to get developers on. So I think it's unfair to compare a brand new product coming out of the gate in terms of capabilities with stuff that's been out there for a year or more already.
Yeah, so I want to go a little bit into some comments that we received from a listener. Chris, I'm going to guess that it's pronounced Petrin, sent me a whole lot of comments via Twitter over the last couple of days. He's got one. He went and got it on Sunday. His review is that it sounds better than a Play One and way, way better than things like the Echo. He says that the voice detection is better than the Echo. He finds that the Spotify integration is better than all on the other devices that are out there. He also greatly prefers the Cortana app to the Alexa app. I've never used the Alexa app. I don't really know how to compare that.
It's terrible.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's awful.
Okay. One of the things that he sent me just before we recorded tonight is that apparently on Sunday, when the Invoke launched, it had about 75 skills or whatever it is that Cortana is calling their version of Amazon voice service skill things. I'm trying not to say the A word here.
They're common skills. They're skills.
Okay. So 70, I think he said 74 when it launched. And then he said today they launched like another 150 or something like that. So
nice.
And apparently, he is really tracking this stuff down. He said right now, Google Home has around 550 skills. And when it launched, it had 10. So Cortana coming out of the gate has way more than Google Home did. And then obviously Google Home ramped up quickly, and we're seeing Cortana ramp up quickly. And you would expect the third player in the market to launch with more skills than the competitors did when they launched. That makes sense. The other thing that he pointed out, and that we should absolutely point out, is that weird partnership that we've talked about a couple of times between Microsoft's Cortana and Amazon's voice services, where they're going to cross-mogenate. You're going to be able to use Cortana to invoke Amazon skills. At some point. Yeah, we don't know when, but you will be able to ask Cortana to invoke the 17,000 plus skills that Alexa has. So that's interesting. Like, it seems like it's going to be awkward, but it would fill in all of those gaps.
It would, but remember, those skills often require their own trigger word. So you would be asking Cortana to ask her to ask Plex to do something, and I think that gets a little bit ridiculous. I think it's interesting that they're doing this. I want to see how it's implemented. Honestly, I feel like it's a handshake agreement between the two companies to kind of benefit from each other's capabilities. What I want to see is what sort of native integrations do the two companies come out with in the future?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, the process of porting an Amazon skill to a Cortana skill is also super simple. So it could be that developers could jump on this fairly easily, but who knows? Because they're not going to do the work if they don't perceive anybody is using Cortana. Even if it's a small amount of work, no one's going to do it. So we'll see. I'm really curious. I have swung dramatically back and forth on whether or not I want this thing, because I love the fact that it sounds really, really good and has voice assistant stuff. I like Cortana. I don't use it a ton, but I'm an Android guy and Cortana is there. I am trying to use Cortana more on my phone and stuff. And there are some things that Cortana does really, really well. Like yesterday, I a meeting got added to my calendar like mid-morning that was for early afternoon. And shortly thereafter, I got a Cortana notification that said, you've got a schedule conflict this afternoon. Nothing else notified me of that because they were also on different calendars. And that's pretty awesome. So like I've always really enjoyed Cortana. So there's that, but I'm also really concerned that Microsoft might just drop this thing like immediately. It doesn't seem like it's gotten a lot of big time press from Microsoft. It took so long to get it out. We don't really know why. I'm a little concerned about this thing. So
I'd
I'm not sure.
Say it's a little early for you to be worried. It's day 4 of their first third party device with Cortana in it.
Well, but it's also the only third party device with Cortana in it. And that we've known about for 9 months, but we haven't heard about any others even in development.
Well, not entirely true, right? We have heard that, I can't think of the name, but a controls company that makes thermostats is making a thermostat with Cortana built into it.
Right. That's true.
So, you're laughing at that, but there is an Ecobee thermostat that has the Echo Assistant built into it. And the reason that that makes sense is because you kind of have them all over the house, or at least, one or two of them around the house already. So,
right.
I don't know. I want to see where this goes. I mean, yes, I worry that this might not be a good long-term investment for the company to be supporting a service for speakers when they just eliminated their music service. But
right.
Who knows? And remember that in a couple of months, we have Apple coming out with theirs too. So there's going to be more competition in this space, but does it end up being one of these kind of rising tide things?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably enough on the Armin Cardin Invoke. Why don't we move on to the next story?
I think we've mentioned Plex, right? We talked about that, right? Plex. Oh, yeah. We talk about Plex all the time, usually as the first video story. So there is an update for the Plex application on the Xbox One. And if you have been playing with the Plex Media Player app that you can download and run on Windows or on your Mac, then this is going to look very familiar to you because it is essentially the full screen mode from those versions of Plex. So this is the tiled version that scrolls down and has the menu on the top. And have I mentioned how much I hate this menu structure? We've talked about this before. We talked about this when it came out on the desktop. And I have three words. Nonsensical navigation patterns. Nobody at any point in time in looking at a menu in the top of the screen has thought, oh, maybe I should go up to see what the options are here. Nobody.
So let's talk about that real briefly, because I performed an experiment tonight. This is super scientific, by the way. Super scientific. I have a 9-year-old. A 9-year-old who is abundantly familiar with the existing Plex app on the Xbox One. She uses it quite frequently. She knows how to switch between different Plex servers and all of that stuff. She knows how to use Plex.
Okay.
But she hasn't used it in a few days. So today was her first opportunity to try the new version. So I loaded it up for the first time and it does the tutorial, which that desktop app didn't have a tutorial that showed you how to move right to switch between the different library types and then told you to go up to get to other servers. She totally missed the part of the instructions that said that you should go up.
Mm-hmm.
So she very quickly figured out, like, you know, she started the movies. I'm like, all right, what if you want to watch a TV show? And she figured that out immediately. Bang. And then I said, how would you watch a movie on Richard's server? And She arrowed back and forth, left and right, left, and couldn't find it. Saw, you know, the top right corner, it has your username icon thing. So she went over there because that's where the server selector used to be in the Xbox app.
Right.
Clicked on my name. There's an option in that list that's like manage servers or something, or media service. It says media service. And I'm like, she's going to click that. And that's not going to be what she wants. She didn't click it, which was kind of puzzling to me. Went back to going back and forth like one or two more times. And then she noticed the up arrows. And once she noticed the up arrows, she was totally fine. But it did take her 20, 30 seconds to figure it out.
Yeah, that it just doesn't make sense. I don't understand. Somebody at Plex thought that this was a good user experience. They're wrong. I just don't understand. What I like about it is that it clumps these things together into these categories that you have shows, you have movies, you have videos, you have music, and you have pictures. I like that. I think that's a really smart thing. It gets away from that problem that we had with a tile for every single library. That was not scalable.
Right.
I also like that it blends all of the different shared libraries you have access to into those categories. I think that's very smart. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it makes any sense that you go up to view that. I also have problems, and I forgot about what you were complaining about last time on this, which is the difference between discover and browse. By default, if you select one of those tabs, what you see underneath it is the discover mode. If you want to browse it, then you need to click on the actual icon for that different section. And then you end up looking at the browse mode. Here's the other thing that I don't like about this up menu thing. Like, if you end up changing one of the libraries in one of those sections, for example, I change shows to, instead of my recorded TV, show the specials and concerts thing, library that I have. Then every time you go to shows, that's what you're going to see the next time you go back to that. That's what's going to be there by default. Now you go out, you're not home, and other people in your household are trying to find the recorded TV, and they have to figure out how to do this. Hopefully, they know that you can go up and you can switch the library up. Doesn't make any sense to me. I hope they rethink this. Nonetheless, the overall experience, I think, for being able to browse stuff and being able to read content on the screen, it's nice. It's pretty. There's a whole lot of glassy, see-through dialogues that I don't quite understand. I think they're a bit confusing. This UI needs some refinement, but it's an improvement over what we had.
Mm-hmm, definitely. You know, another thing that I noticed in it last week, I think it was your idea, actually, Richard, that you recommended that I should try when using Plex as my DVR. I talked about the troubles that I had of skipping commercials and stuff like that. I think it was you that recommended that I should try doing the optimized versions where Plex will go in and convert files for different formats to optimize them.
Yep.
And so I did that. And then what it does is gives you two copies of the same show in your library. And in every client that I've loaded up on the shows that I did the optimized thing for, it has a little badge in the corner that says two to signify that I have two versions of it. In none of the clients, except for this one, this brand new one on the Xbox, could I figure out how to actually choose which version of the episode that I wanted to watch?
Wow. Okay. Well, that's an improvement.
Yeah. And it makes a big difference. So when I was doing the, you know, the raw MPEG from my over the air recording, if I wanted to skip commercials, when it was working really well, it was 3-ish seconds of waiting for it to buffer or whatever. On the optimized version, it was almost instantaneous. It was really good. So that was a really awesome suggestion from you, Richard. So just to super clarify that for anybody else who's having a similar issue with the Plex DVR, go into those shows that you have recorded, and in the Plex settings, you can say, optimize this. And I chose the option of optimize for TV, and it gives you a 1080p MP4 of it that's 6 megabits per second video bitrate. It was good. It's really, really good. You know, it takes a while for it to do those conversions, but whatever. I'm not watching it live. So yeah. It's good. It was a really great suggestion.
Cool. I'm glad that worked for you. Now, another thing that they have enabled in the Xbox version of Plex is compatibility with their skill for the Echo. And this is something that has worked on other clients. It works on the Roku. It works on Apple TV. But it didn't work on any of the consoles. So now you can use the Plex skill to control your Plex TV viewing or movie viewing or whatever. So you can have it pause or play or make recommendations, whatever. The problem that I have with this basically requires that you already have the application open. So, for example, you can't just have your Xbox on and then say, ask Plex to do something, and it's going to launch Plex and do something. The application has to be running. Worse, there's a big delay. Like, I had the Plex application up and running for a good 2-3 minutes, and the Plex skill still did not actually see that the application was up and running. It wasn't until like 5 minutes later when I tried it again that it recognized that player was running and that it was able to communicate with it. So there's probably some beacon that it needs to be broadcasting that it isn't broadcasting like frequently enough or something.
So you can't just be like, hey, Madam A, play Mr. Robot on my Xbox.
Correct. It's definitely not that simple. You have to tell it, you have to tell it what you want to play, and it already has to be the Plex app already has to be up on the device. If you have multiple Plex applications running that it can see, then it's going to ask you which one, and you have to select it by number because it'll identify them by name, and you have to say which one you want. So it's a little cumbersome. I can see that it would be helpful if you really want to use voice, but I'm not all that sold on it. I don't know.
Okay. Another cool thing that I particularly enjoyed is that they cleaned up all of this mess around tying it to your Xbox profile. On my Xbox at home, I have my account and I set up an account for Jen. I'm doing it as my home Xbox so that anyone who signs in can access everything and use all the Xbox Live stuff, but it automatically signs in as Jen, so that it doesn't always look like it's me on the Xbox and they're not getting notifications about my friends getting online and all of that craziness. But previously, if you logged into the Plex app as, say, Jen's account, and then, you know, closed it, whatever, came back the next day, logged in as me on the Xbox and opened Plex, it would freak out and not know what to do, and I couldn't use Plex, basically. Now, I set it up the first time on Jen's account, closed it down, switched to my profile, opened it up, and thought it would just go straight in. It doesn't. It still makes you do the whole account linking thing. So maybe Jen and I could have separate Plex accounts, and that does actually kind of make sense, I guess. But the point is, I was able to log in with my profile, make Plex work, switch back to Jen's profile, Plex still worked. Before that didn't work. You had to just determine which Xbox profile you were going to have Plex work with. And that was kind of lame, super lame, really. So that's all fixed. They've also added more formats of subtitles that they support natively. So that's good for all of you who want or need subtitles. And anything else on this version of Plex with Xbox One before we move on?
No, I mean, at some point, since it's on the Xbox One, I'm hoping it is going to support Atmos. And I know that I tweeted about this, but we haven't really talked about this on this show at all. There is a discussion in the forums where someone from Plex has stated that they are researching Atmos on Plex. So
nice.
I would imagine that the Xbox One would be one platform where we might see it, since Atmos is a supported format on that box.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, well, we're already talking about the Xbox, so let's move on to some gaming news. Some pretty big news this week in gaming stuff, and I don't just mean big AAA game launches. Nope. Instead, I mean a huge new feature on the Xbox One, one that I never thought we would actually get, and that is backwards compatibility of original Xbox games.
One that you never thought you'd actually want.
That's true too. So it's here. It's real. It is absolutely a real thing. They have released support for 13 original Xbox games. The biggest, most important ones in the list, Black, an amazing first-person shooter, apparently. You know, maybe I should preface this by saying, of these games I'm going to list, I never played any of them, but I've heard really good things about most of these games that I'm going to list. So Black, Crimson Skies, which is a flying game, Fusion Frenzy, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, one of the great BioWare role-playing games, and Ninja Gaiden Black, which, holy crap, the internet is freaking out about the ability to play this game. I've seen so many people on the internet talking about how Ninja Gaiden Black is like top five all-time game for a lot of people. So I'm actually really interested in playing that one now. All of these games run at higher resolution on the Xbox One. Once the Xbox One X comes out, they'll run at even higher resolution. You know, they made a point of saying, if you play Ninja Gaiden Black on an Xbox One X, it'll be 16 times the graphical resolution of the original Xbox and still running at 60 frames per second. So that's going to be pretty impressive, especially like these are 15-year-old games at this point, 16-year-old games, and they could actually look pretty decent. I saw some graphical comparisons of Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic on the original Xbox and upscaled on the Xbox One S, and it looks a lot better. But again, these aren't like remasters. These are the original games. You play these by sticking your old original Xbox game disc into your Xbox One to play them, or buy them from the store. And because they're not remasters, that means that any of the like online multiplayer stuff that would have been there, it ain't there anymore, guys. They shut those servers down years and years and years ago. So you're not playing any of these games online. All of the local co-op stuff would obviously still work. Also, no achievements. Achievements didn't exist on the original Xbox. So you're not going to get achievements for these either. It's just going to be about playing these games because they're fun. Another cool thing here is that that Ninja Gaiden Black, they're so excited about it. They know that we're all so excited about it. They decided to toss that into the Xbox Game Pass library. So that's that subscription service where you pay Microsoft $10 a month and you get access to download and play. The library's got to be creeping up on 150 titles at this point, as much as you want for the month. Ninja Gaiden Black is now included in that. So like I said, 13 games available right now. More, they said, coming in the spring. So apparently I'm guessing this might be a little bit more work than maybe some of the Xbox 360 backwards compatibility translations, because we got those on a pretty quick cycle, you know?
Yeah.
Waiting until spring for the next batch of these? Huh. And then they also use this as an opportunity to say that some Xbox 360 games that are backwards compatible are going to get Xbox One X enhancements, which is kind of nuts that they're doing Xbox One X enhancements for 360 games. That's just crazy. Those titles include Halo 3, Fallout 3, Oblivion, and the original Assassin's Creed. So, of course, all of those will be available for you on November 7th when the Xbox One X comes out. That's 2 weeks from the day that we're recording this, Richard. 2 weeks until the One X.
So does that mean that I need to find someone else to record with because you're going to be standing in line at a Best Buy?
No. I did pre-order because I don't like standing in line. And I pre-ordered from Amazon because I don't like going to stores. But I don't know if I still haven't decided if I'm going to keep my pre-order. $500 is a lot of money. And I don't know. I'm really struggling with this one, Richard.
Yeah, struggling. I know what my recommendation would be. I just don't see how it's worth it for you yet. At some point in time, if you then decide to kind of graduate your Xboxes either through your family or through your house somehow, maybe it makes sense. But I just don't see how it makes sense for you right now.
Why doesn't it make sense for me? I actually play games on my Xbox.
I know you play games. I know. No, I get that. But
and I have a 4K TV.
Yeah, I know. But $500, it's like you're buying your game console all over again. You just bought one last Christmas.
Yes. Yes, I did. I could potentially sell that one.
You could potentially, but I mean, you can get those now for what? Like
200 bucks
something. Right. So
yeah, I don't know. I haven't made up my mind yet, but like I could wait for a sale or a price drop or something like that, but I don't imagine that's going to happen until next summer.
That's not going to happen for a while. All right. Well, what do people do if they do want to stand in line?
Well, not just stand in line. If you want to do more than just stand in line, there will be launch events for this thing all over the world. These events are starting at 11 p.m. Eastern, but they are time shifting these based on your time zone. So on the West Coast, these events are starting at 9 p.m., which is kind of awesome for those guys. And they're hour-long events, you know, because in the East Coast, this thing launches at midnight Eastern. So it's a one-hour event at a whole bunch of Microsoft stores. They're going to be doing giveaways. They're going to have consoles that you can play on there. If you pre-ordered it from the Microsoft store, you'll obviously be going and picking up your console and going home with it. There are a whole bunch of Best Buys around the United States that are participating in this. In fact, one of my area Best Buys is actually doing something. So I did kind of consider switching up my pre-order and maybe checking out. No, I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. I'm not going to do that. And then some GameStops are doing some events too. And then there are other events happening in other countries around the world too. But I'm an old guy. I don't really get into these types of events anymore. So I might just watch it on Mixer because they're going to do a big event at the Microsoft store in New York City and live stream all of that on the Xbox Mixer channel for the rest of us. So check that out if you're super excited about the Xbox One X craze. All right. Well, we mentioned that they're doing this on Mixer. Mixer also got an interesting update in the last week or so. This is for Minecraft specifically. And that is that they've made it so that you can add commands inside of your Mixer broadcast that are tied to basically anything that can be a command in Mindstream. You can make a button for it that shows up on your Mixer stream, and your viewers can spend their little lightning bolt points that you get from watching and streaming in Mixer and make things happen in your game. So if I was playing Minecraft and I put a button on my stream that said, you know, spend 50 lightning bolts, and when you click this, a horde of creepers will show up, Richard could be watching my Mixer stream and be like, ha ha ha, here come the creepers, bang, and a whole bunch of creepers show up in my game. And that's really, really cool. Like, that is the other big feature that sets Mixer apart from Twitch. The other big feature, obviously, is the super, super low latency, less than 1 second latency if everything is working out perfect for you. So that's a really, really big deal for all of you Minecraft streamers out there. You're going to want to click on the link here in the show notes to find out how to set that all up for your own streams. And I think your viewers are going to have a whole lot of fun watching you play Minecraft when they can control what happens inside of your game. Another week means new sales for Xbox Live games. it's usually the deals with gold and the spotlight sale. This week, it's deals with gold and Xbox Shocktober savings. It's a good thing there's the cool Shocktober savings thing, because the deals with gold are all pretty terrible this week. There's really nothing worth mentioning there. The Shocktober savings sale, though, it's mostly horror games or other scary type of games. Things like Resident Evil, Dead by Daylight, Doom, Dead Rising, Walking Dead. Wow, a whole lot of those games have the word dead.
Of course, that makes sense. You have Resident Evils written down, meaning like the Resident Evil titles. I read that as Resident Elvis.
That would be frightening too. So lots and lots of games for sale as part of the Shocktober savings thing. So check that out if you're into any of those games. And then, of course, a quick reminder on the games with gold that are available all month long on Xbox One. You've got Gone Home. Right now through November 15th on Xbox One is the Turing Test. And then the 360 game that's available through the end of October is Medal of Honor Airborne. All right, Richard, that's it for our gaming stuff. Why don't you move us on out of that section?
And into mobile. And unfortunately, all we ever have these days with mobile is usually bad news. We knew this one was coming eventually. In fact, I think we talked about this the last time a big company made a move away, or a big organization made a move away from Windows Phone. And that is that Delta is going to be moving away from Surface and away from their Windows Phone devices, and they're going to be moving to iOS devices. So now the pilots and the crew in the airplane, the flight attendants, will all be using iOS devices. I don't know if any of you fly Delta. I take Delta regularly, and the capabilities that they have with those Windows phones that they use, these were the large Nokias from way back, if I remember correctly.
I don't know if it was a
1020. I think it was not that way back.
So, like maybe the 930?
Yeah, maybe something like that. But they are significant in size, and they have an enormous amount of capabilities. So it's, you know, they're going to have to spend some time really recreating that for iOS devices. I think this is planned for sometime next year that they're going to be rolling that out. But you know, if you think about it, they were really one of the first major domestic carriers to use a phone or a mobile device as part of their just flight support. So it's really, you know, it was cool to see them do it. It was cool that Windows was one of the first devices there, Windows Phone. But that day is over, unfortunately, and we'll be seeing them use iOS devices in the next coming years.
Boo. I understand it's in the Windows phones. Not entirely so sure about getting rid of the pilot's surfaces, but whatever. It's not like it impacts me at all.
Yeah. I don't know.
let's get out of here. But before we do that, let's go into what is many of our listeners' favorite segments. What's going on in our entertainment centers? Richard, kick us off.
So I mentioned that I was trying the Plex skill on my Echo. And like I said, I'm a little bit hot and cold on it. It has some nice features. It's not as intuitive as I would like it to be. One thing that I have to give to Plex, because I always give them this credit, they have the most comprehensive documentation I have ever seen a product company create for their skill. It is amazing. And of course, it's on the Plex help and documentation site where all the other Plex documentation is. So really nice job there. If you want to know what it's capable of, check that out. You can do a ton of stuff on it, and it's all very well documented there. I wanted to mention, and we should have mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, when the guide data started coming back, the My Media Center app started working for me again. So Josh, you were right. It was a data problem.
Well, that's so good, I guess.
I would ask people who are using the My Media Center apps on iOS or Android to give them a try if they had given up on them. Because remember, one of the things that we really liked about them was the premiere section that shows you all the new shows that are coming out. And that is functioning the way it's supposed to now. We haven't had a whole lot of time to talk about the new Xbox. Well, the new Xbox user experience. They rolled that out last week, as we talked about. And so I've been playing around with that. And whereas I would normally use my TV for Netflix and Plex and stuff like that, I've been trying to use those apps more on the Xbox to familiarize myself more with the experience. I said it when they first showed it off, and I'll say it again. I think this is the best Xbox One experience that they've had as of yet. I think when they came out with the Xbox One experience that was based on Windows 10, they basically ruined the Xbox because they made it look like and behave like a desktop. And they've been backtracking ever since then. And I think this gets much, much closer to a 10-foot interface and much closer to a more traditional up-down, left-right navigation model that people are used to, instead of trying to make your D-pad do all the work of a mouse cursor, right. Which is unfortunately the experience that we have on so many Xbox apps now, because essentially they're desktop apps that have been ported to the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
The new experience is so much like Media Center and the dual access Media Center navigation. It's ridiculous.
You're right. It really is. It really is. I've really been liking it. Like I've voiced my concerns and my complaints over the issues with accessing the friends list. But other than that, I have mostly liked it. Definitely don't turn on the light theme. I don't know if you've tried that on your TV yet.
Oh, it's terrible.
If you value your retinas, do not turn on the light theme. It is awful. It is so bad. It hurts. It hurts. You should not have that much bright, flat, white screen blasting you in the face ever. It's not a good idea. Don't turn it on. The other thing that I still wish that they would work on is the store. Seriously, the store takes a million years to load. Every time I want to try to get to the store, it's like, all right, I guess I'm going to go get a cup of coffee while I wait for this thing to load. It's stupid.
Yeah. I don't really go there that often, so it's not something that I'm used to, but that would be annoying. So that's pretty much it from a hardware perspective. But in terms of what I've been watching, I forgot to mention last week that Mr. Robot started.
Mm-hmm.
And that started while I was away. So I actually watched that remotely after recording it at home while I was out in Seattle, and then watched last week's episode after that recorded. The season's very different. I'm enjoying it, but it's mm-hmm. very different. So curious to see where they go with it. I am still watching Game of Thrones. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. And I think I mentioned last time that I gave Iron Fist a try. I'm done. I finished it. I really don't understand all the ire. I just don't get it. I actually enjoyed this show. And at the very least, I don't understand how people can't appreciate the choreography of the martial arts scenes, which are happening all the time.
You must have been driving through a tunnel or something. You were breaking up there. You couldn't. I must have heard you wrong. There's no way you just said that you actually liked Iron Fist. So.
I did. I thought it was a decent storyline that carried throughout the entire season. I just don't see what all the stress was about. It was enjoyable. Now, that said, I am finished with Will and Grace. I am not enjoying it. I don't know what they were trying to do with this redo, but it was terrible. Along those lines, and here I'm going to admit something that, you know, falls into that embarrassing TV watching category. Okay, when I was in college, long, long time ago, big thing when I was in college, soaps, daytime soaps, nighttime soaps. Big thing when I was in college, Dynasty. You know what CW tried to recreate? Dynasty. It is terrible. Do not watch it. It is absolutely unbelievably bad. Okay, done with that. Watching Big Bang Theory and Modern Family, keeping up with those because they're quick and easy ones. This Is Us, also as good as it's been. The Flash and the Arrow are back. Y5O. I watched another episode of Van Helsing, and I forgot to mention last week that Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency has started again on BBC, so we watched the first two episodes of season two of that, and it is as crazy and fun as always. Definitely enjoying that. One final thing for me today, a recommendation. We lost Robert Guillaume today. Very talented comedic actor who's probably best known for Benson, but one of my favorite characters that he's ever played is Isaac in Aaron Sorkin's Sports Night. And if you have not seen Sports Night yet, you need to. It's on the ABC app, and it's also available, I believe, through Hulu. It is a very, very entertaining and just good, good series.
Cool. Very cool. He was also the voice of Rafiki.
Ah, yes, he was. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, so in terms of hardware and you know that sort of stuff, the main thing that I played around with was the optimized version stuff in Plex. I mentioned that earlier, but again, quick reminder, you guys might want to check that out because it does help a lot. And then in terms of media stuff that I've been consuming, I'm going to throw a surprise music pick out for you guys. This will even surprise Richard, I think. And this is probably his fault. I opened up Spotify today. And one of the new albums that it recommended was the latest album from Darius Rucker, who might not be super familiar to you if you're not a country music fan, which I'm generally not. But if you are familiar with Hootie and the Blowfish, then Darius Rucker is Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish. That's probably yep. not the great way to describe him, but he's the dude from Hootie and the Blowfish. And he's a country singer now, and they recommended his album to me, and I listened to it, and I actually really liked it. I mean, it's definitely more on the poppy side of country, but I enjoyed it. It was cool.
I will have to check that out.
I blame you because you're the one who's been getting more and more into country music lately.
Yeah.
So this is somehow your fault.
Okay, I'll take that fault.
Okay. I also watched the first episode of Mr. Robot, enjoyed it a lot. Like you said, yeah, it's a different season, but I'm liking it. And watched, I want to say episode 4 of The Good Place. This was absolutely, without a doubt, the worst episode of The Good Place that I've ever seen. It was not all that funny. Yeah, I'm sure that, because it was kind of a transitionary episode. Like there was this big, huge surprise at the end of season 1. And then the first couple of episodes of season 2 were like, well, now how do we deal with that? And then this one is like, this is how we're going to deal with that. And so it's a lot of really plot stuff and not nearly as much just funny. So I think we'll get back into the funny with the next episode, which it was already on last week. I'm just a couple weeks behind. That's it for things that I've been watching. I'm also playing a little bit. This weekend was all about Life is Strange Before the Storm. Episode 2 for me. Episode 2 came out last Thursday. We are, of course, covering this for one of our other podcasts here at the DMZ, Story Players. Played on Friday, got together with Joe on Saturday to record our thoughts about that. That's, if you're, assuming you're not listening live, which you're probably not, that episode is out now. If you're not playing Life is Strange, you need to be. It's amazing. And then you need to be listening to Story Players. So let us know what you think of the episode and your thoughts on Life is Strange Before the Storm, on how that's going for you. And then actually one other thing that I wanted to toss out to our listeners. You guys have been phenomenal about helping each other with questions. I need to build a new computer. I need to build a new computer bad. And I've been thinking about building one of these AMD Ryzen-based things. It's been like 4 years since I've built a computer. I could use some help, some recommendations on what sort of stuff you guys think I should put into it. I actually even was digging through my Costco flyer the other day, Richard, because they have computers at Costco, obviously. And I saw an advertisement for an HP that had the AMD Ryzen 7, which is like the equivalent to the i7 with 16 gigs of RAM and a decent-ish video card for like $600, and thought, I don't know, that's actually a pretty good price. Like, I might just go buy that instead of trying to build one. Like, it's not perfect. It doesn't have an SSD. Instead, it's got a big hard drive in it, but I could probably swap my SSD into it. So I know.
I was so going to just suggest that you do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously. I mean, with the amount of time that you have available, I got to the point where I just don't have time to be messing with that anymore. I can add an extra optical drive, or I can add an SSD if it doesn't have it. But I just don't have the time to be building these myself anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. So any recommendations our listeners want to throw my way, I would greatly appreciate that. I'm not looking to build something crazy. I've been thinking the Ryzen 5 1600X, but then of course Intel had to go and release brand new chips of their own. So I haven't been able to research all that stuff too. I don't know what to do. So I would appreciate any help from you guys. But that's it for my entertainment center. Richard, you've got an announcement.
I do. Just a quick announcement. I've been teasing for a while that I was going to let you know why I'm watching Game of Thrones. I am actually going to be doing, in fact, I am doing, we are pre-recording the first few episodes of a catch-up series, a podcast that will be for people who are catching up on Game of Thrones in anticipation of season 8. So we are plowing through two episodes a week and talking about those episodes in each episode of this podcast. I'm not going to get into who I'm doing this with. I will say that it's called Let's Talk About Thrones, which is a little bit similar to some other podcasts out there, and that may give you a little bit of a hint.
Let's just say you're in good company with this show.
I am in good company. Yes, I am.
Very good company. That's I'm excited for you, Richard. How long are these episodes if you're covering two episodes of Game of Thrones at a time?
Yeah, each episode is anywhere between like 50 minutes and an hour and 15 in most cases.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's about two plus hours of watching for each.
That's pretty good. I don't know how you keep the chatter down. That's impressive. That's really impressive.
And we're keeping each episode itself to just 1 hour. So we will have a teaser episode coming up shortly, just kind of introduce ourselves, and then I would expect in a couple of weeks we'll have this out on our normal weekly schedule.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this show this week. If you would like to get a hold of us, there are a lot of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard's account is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook, where you can like our page at facebook.com/the DMZ. In addition to Richard's Game of Thrones podcast, he's got another one here at the DMZ called Home On, covering the latest home automation and control news. Richard, you got a brand new episode of Home On. What's this one about?
I do. So this was the one I mentioned last week. We had Rose Thibodeau on, and she is the source of information for anything having to do with like DIY security or DIY alarms. And with all the recent alarm news, she seemed like the perfect person to get on for this. So I think we had a lot of fun doing this one, and it's a very informative episode. Coming up after that, we should have a session or two from the Smart Kitchen Summit. And then I have a lot of cool stuff planned for later this fall too. So stay tuned.
Yeah, I listened to that episode of Home On my way into work today. Loved it. Rose was a fantastic guest. She was great.
She's great. She's great. We need to get her into a less echoey space next time. But she was great. I loved having her on.
I mentioned Story Players a little bit earlier. Of course, that Life is Strange episode is out now. We're also finishing up our series on Mass Effect Andromeda. There's 2 episodes left, guys, on that. So if you're playing through that, we're almost done with that one also. And, you know, have other games to look forward to soon with that. And then before we get out of here, we want to invite you to come and join us as we record this show, Entertainment 2.0 Live, typically Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always Tuesdays because, in fact, actually next week it's going to be on Monday because of Halloween. So follow us on Twitter or just follow us on Mixer to get the notifications so that you'll know exactly when we're going to be live. There's a chat room. You can participate in real time with us. It's a ton of fun for us. And I think it's a ton of fun for you too. So hopefully we will see you back next Monday as we record the show, because that's going to do it for episode 427. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.